Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Night. I am back home from Paris, the wonderful Paris. Thank you for your feedback on last week's episode. I couldn't quite believe how many of you would relate and how much power there is in saying it's okay to quote unquote fail, you know? And I think hearing someone just say like, I failed and it's okay, is so freeing, and almost more freeing than someone saying like, I ran a marathon in 2.5 hours. Both are so powerful. But one of them gives a voice to the majority of the population who will be extraordinary in their own way, but will never be elite runners. And I think, you know, for a little while I was trying to kid myself into thinking I was an elite runner. I'm not. I'm just a girl with a dream. And yeah, I think on reflection now, looking back, because I've had time off running, I haven't run since the marathon, so over a week ago now, I think what I've really learned is that my type of running and my love for fitness is really nothing about races or competition, and all about, honestly, summer evening sunset runs, early morning strolls, and all of the little, you know, the best memories I have running, none of them are at races, apart from the ultra that I did, because that felt really friendly. And I've spoken about that a little bit before, but ultras feel much more inclusive because they're slow and beautiful and there's loads of food. This week, we're going to be talking about how to quit. So we've spoken about creating and making new habits, healthy habits that serve us. But what about breaking them? And can we create new habits while breaking old ones? One of my most asked questions is, how did you stop smoking? I smoked for 10 years. I do believe it was less about the cigarettes and more about having to do something with my hands and my free time. I was always awkward growing up in social settings, and smoking gave me something to do and a way to feel cool. There's nothing cool about it. See, when you grow up a little bit sad with a mind that won't stop chattering away, smoking and drinking can become an outlet. A glass of wine or bottle of wine and a smoke became my nightly ritual. It was only until those things started to become a morning ritual that I started to get scared. More than anything, I wish I could go back in time and shake 14-year-old me with that rolly in her hand on that summer's day and say, this doesn't make people like you more. It doesn't fix the anger in your chest. And one day when you are 30, you will look back and wish your lungs worked better. So to anyone who wants to quit, try to do it now. Don't put it off. Just as the ghosts of obesity follow me in my skin and in my knees, the ghosts of my habits follow me now in my organs. The damage I have done might not ever be erased, but I hope by telling my tales, it inspires young people to think of a future with hope and health and vitality, because you do have a future. You do, friend. You do. Live like it. Live like one day you'll be 90 and wearing your adventures and habits on your body like the moss that grows on an ancient tree, bedded in and weathered. You want a body that carries you well to that point, that is able to create happy memories and experience everything this world has to offer, both within your ability to create dreams for yourself and to physically execute them for your loved ones and generations to come. I have an addictive personality, but for a long time, I wasn't aware of this or what it meant for me. When I do something, I do it. Whole hog, full send, saddle up. I don't walk, I gallop into things that make me feel something. So yes, smoking turned into running. That passion for self-destructiveness and so-called fun turned into wellness. But how, I hear you ask? Well, let's get into it. So I'm going to give you some science. I'm also going to tell some stories, the usual Nine Lives way of doing things. But I just wanted to say that some of this information has been taken from articles and papers. The main bulk of the framework is from time.com and also the American Lung Association. So that is where I'm getting my facts and figures. Again, I will link these papers in the description if you wish to continue reading. If we want to change our habits, research suggests that we need to understand how they work, anticipate the cues that trigger them, and find ways to break our habit cycle before it starts. Taming a bad habit requires a lot of planning. We need to reverse engineer the chain of behavior that precedes them, and then either remove the cues that set us off altogether, or take the time to build new habits that will replace them. It involves acknowledging that much of what we do is habitual and not the result of our own decision-making, and setting goals in a way that drives new behavior patterns. Pretty much most of what we do is in our subconscious mind. I'll give you an example of this. Last night, Joe and I were driving home from a meeting, and Joe was like, oh my God, I just did that thing where we're in our area. I just drove for half an hour without even realizing how I got here. And that's the subconscious mind taking over. That's just a habit, the habit of turning left and right until you're home, the habit of reaching for a cigarette, the habit of reaching for a drink. These are all things that your subconscious mind is doing for you. But it's not that easy to break a habit because nature has made sure of it. This is because habits are an essential tool of survival, and without them, the simple tasks of everyday life would overwhelm us. So for example, Americans spend an average of 43% of each day engaged in tasks that are largely unconscious, that have become so automatic that we're able to think and talk about other things while we're doing them. According to research by Wendy Wood, a psychology professor at the University of Southern California, habits are a unique kind of learning system. They're unconscious, so we don't have access to them in the way that we have access to other decisions. Wood says, and I think that's been overlooked in the popular press, and that's what gets people into trouble, which I totally agree with. I think trying to learn what your unconscious mind is doing and how it's driving your habits and your everyday behaviors is so life-changing. And I think a lot of people never really connect with themselves in a way where they're aware of what's actually going on in their day-to-day life. And a lot of people live on autopilot, which I definitely used to do. And it would just be an automatic response. I would say smoking way more than drinking, because smoking, or at least when I was growing up in the 90s, it was very normalized. People smoked inside. All my mates smoked cigarettes. Like, it was just something we did. And whenever I'd feel like a stress response throughout my life, it would always be like a cigarette. But that is an unconscious feeling, and kind of being able to tap into myself and know myself more as I've become older. And in previous episodes, we've spoken a lot about being brave, but also building trust in yourself. So those are two things that tie into this as well. You have to know yourself as a friend to be able to start this process of quitting these habits. So sometimes habits can lead us astray, whether it's turning to comfort food when we're sad or taking a cigarette break when stressed. Habits take practice and repetition to form. The same is true when it comes to breaking them. So I'm going to give a few different tips here, or things that you can do in the immediate to kind of try and combat this, these habits that you have that you're trying to break. And this, by the way, doesn't need to be, I'm using the example of smoking because that would probably be the biggest vice that I had. But this can be anything. This can be, you know, comfort eating, mindless scrolling on social media, self-sabotaging things, whether that's like physical or it's like how you speak to yourself. These are all things you do in your unconscious that you need to start, you know, stopping and really meeting it with like, I'm going to do something different. A big thing around habits and why we reach for things is linked to your stress levels. Many habits, including smoking or excess sugar consumption, for example, involve the brain's dopamine or reward system, which I'm sure we all know about this now. It's become so popular online to speak of neuroscience and the dopamine reward system, which is a feel-good chemical that transmits signals between neurons in the brain. The first time you engage in a new rewarding behavior, you get a euphoric feeling from doing it as a result of a dopamine release. This leads to changes in both the connections between neurons and the brain systems responsible for actions, and can largely account for why we start to form bad habits in the first place. So this is a huge part of why we continue to do things that are bad for us, because they make us feel good, which is hideous, right? I mean, if I look back on my lifestyle, I think the most heartbreaking thing of it is that it made me feel really good in the short term. And that's why it's so difficult, because it is so much easier to wake up, feel stressed, feel like you're having a low mood episode, and make, you know, go reach for a cigarette, go outside, have a cup of tea and do that, instead of, right, I've got to put on my trainers, pack a gym bag, walk to the gym, be around strangers, not have that instant rush of like, okay, oh my God, that's so relieving. You know, it's so difficult to overcome this. So, but it's possible. It's really, really possible. And that's why delayed gratification, which we'll talk about later, really is what you're going to have to train yourself to like. So this can be linked all the way back to evolution. A scientist called Poldrack says, in the caveman days, meat wasn't salted, dry rubbed, or grilled to perfection. They were just eating meat, like plain meat. So now in the modern world, our brains aren't well equipped to deal with the big rush one gets from these sorts of things, like sugars, high flavors. As a result, the frontal lobe, the brain's control center, gets overwhelmed. You're more likely to do the thing you don't want to do when you're stressed out. There are, however, ways to address the root cause of these seemingly detrimental habits. Solutions could be get more sleep, exercise regularly, opt for stress reduction techniques like meditation, which will work to increase willpower and overall brain health. So I know, easier said than done, right? Sometimes I read these articles and I know it's great to put the information out there, but obviously this whole podcast is about sometimes it's not that easy. So I promise I will be breaking this down and making it a little bit more accessible. But in my experience, one of the biggest things to get to grips with when trying to quit habits is knowing your cues. Cues are the context where you tend to engage in the behavior. If you're a smoker, the cue might be work breaks. If you're a dessert aficionado, it might be simply scouring the dessert menu. You're more likely to relapse in the context of where you've done it before. So this is also all to do with environment. And this is where tricky conversations have to happen with yourself and with other people. One of the biggest things that I had to do was tell my mates and my family, I'm trying to quit smoking, because unfortunately the environments that I was around and with and the people I was hanging out with were all smokers. And, you know, we went to the pub a lot, or there'd be a break at university and I'd go outside and have a smoke. So I had to, for example, uni, when I was trying to cut down on, in my final year, I wouldn't allow myself to walk to the smoking area, because if I walk to the smoking area, I'm having a cigarette. So I would stay in class instead. And I was, at that point, I was working on being a sculptor. So I would, you know, work with my clay and really try and distract myself. I did manage to cut down a little bit, and then it got worse when I left, but I took myself out of that environment. So having some kind of like harsher conversations with yourself around the environments that you're putting yourself in and the people that you're surrounding yourself with, even if it is temporary for like a couple weeks, where you just say, look, I really want to hit this on the head and I don't have the willpower currently, because there's no shame in saying I don't have the willpower to do this. You know, I can't be around that environment at this present moment. So just letting you know, guys, I'm going to look after my health on this one. I'm going to say no to the pub for a few weeks. And I'd really, really appreciate if you didn't offer me cigarettes or didn't make fun of me and supported me. That would be really, really great too. So this is my favorite one, and this is how I quit smoking, is replacing a bad habit with a good one. So habit replacement. Instead of trying to stop doing something, because it's so hard to stop a behavior, start doing something else. We are action-orientated creatures. Studies have shown that the more you suppress your thoughts, the more likely you are to think about that thought or even revert back to that bad habit. So the more you try not to think about smoking or sugar or takeaway food, the more you'll be thinking about it, which is why the whole binge restrict cycle is so closely linked, right? And how the only times I ever relapsed with my binge eating was when I restricted my food, because I'm thinking more about food. So I end up binging. It's the same goes for cigarettes, you know? You have to create lifestyles and pathways that you're able to walk down that are healthier, that distract you, that replace the habit, that feel better. And then little by little by little, the importance of this habit is more than this one. So the more you try and restrict, the more you will binge. It's the same for food and cigarettes and everything. It's all about balance and filling your cup with things that are good for you so that you're nourished as a human being. A 2008 study in Appetite found that those who suppressed their thoughts about eating chocolate exhibited a behavioral rebound effect where they consumed significantly more chocolate than those who didn't. A 2010 study published in Psychological Science found that smokers who tried to restrain their thoughts about smoking wound up thinking about it even more. So if you're a smoker and you tell yourself not to smoke, your brain hears smoke. Conversely, if you tell yourself to chew gum every time you want a cigarette, your brain has a more positive, concrete action to do so. If 5 p.m. has been linked to a glass of wine for years, use it as a time to, instead of wine, double down on hydration. Make sure the fridge is stocked with waters, lemon. You know, there are so many ways of replacing these habits. But it takes a lot of time in forming new habits. It's a commitment, and don't be discouraged if it takes you longer than you expected, because it took me 3 years to quit smoking. So I'll just put that into context there. I tried to start quitting in 2018 and I quit fully in 2021, I think. So I was cutting, same with my alcohol, and I know I've told that story, but I didn't go cold turkey on anything. I personally found it easier, and what worked for me was cutting down little by little. So I turned from a chain smoker to a social smoker. That was my first step, was like, right, I'm not going to sit here and smoke like 20 cigarettes a day, but I will have one when I'm with my mates and they have them. That's better, right? That's better than being a chain smoker, but I'm not quitting, because I know that if I try to quit right now, I'm going to relapse. However, some people find the cold turkey method really effective, the whole flushing them down the toilet and never, you know, the same with sobriety. A lot of people find and are in situations that are dangerous and need to do the cold turkey thing. And if that's how you feel you want to go about this journey, then all power to you. That's like the most impressive thing in the world. I just knew that I needed to slowly, while I was meeting my new self, cut down little by little by little. So a big thing for me was obviously running. Now, what's so beautiful about endurance sports is how much your heart and lungs are working. And to give you like a little bit of medical context around like me, I had a resting heart rate of, I think it was 78 at its highest. My resting heart rate is now 52. So I can see and feel the physical effects of quitting smoking and becoming fit. And I knew, and there was a period of time where, and I, you know, I want to make this really clear, my old lifestyles overlapped. So let's say there's like party girl Cassia, and then there's marathon runner Cassia. They're obviously completely two different people, but for a long time, those lifestyles were overlapping. So, you know, I would go out with my mates and smoke cigarettes and drink, and then get up in the morning and try and run a 10K. Could you do both? Jury's out. I think I definitely couldn't maintain that for a long time because I did feel very ill while running. And I remember I plateaued at a 10K. I mean, I was walk running it at that point. And I also plateaued in my fitness journey and weight loss journey because I still was trying to cling on to the partying. Now, You can do both and balance both, of course. I personally can't because I have a bit of a problem, but a lot of people don't, and they can do both, which is fantastic. However, smoking and running, no matter how you try and say it, or, you know, they don't go hand in hand. I don't think you can be a heavy smoker and be a long distance runner. I certainly couldn't. I kept thinking, like, why am I unable to breathe properly while I'm running? Why am I not progressing? Why can't I go any faster? I can't go any further. So for me, it was the slow sort of like intake of running and lifting weights into my life that was pushing out cigarettes. Because I was falling in love with this thing, because I was learning that with delayed gratification came life-changing results. And I started to see them in the way I felt, the way I looked, the way I was carrying myself. And I started viewing cigarettes as something that was holding me back and something that was creating a version of myself that I didn't like and I didn't want to be anymore. Obviously, it's incredibly difficult because nicotine is an addictive substance, and I'm not going to try and say that like endorphins are a replacement for that incredibly potent chemical. However, runner's high, the first time you experience it and you get to realize that there are like natural ways of occurring chemicals that make you feel happy and give you a rush, you start to kind of clock on like, right, maybe I could quit. Maybe this could be the lifestyle for me. And I think more often than not, what happens is that we get so bedded into behavioral patterns that we believe that that is our identity. And that is something that we just think of as like, that's who we are. And the most beautiful thing about life and being a human being is that we have so much power in us to change patterns and change identity at any point, at any age, whenever you want to. I think it's in knowing and accepting that that is an option could be the first step for you, because often smoking, even though we know it's bad for us, is like a kind of, for me at least, it felt a little bit like self-sabotage, because every time I lit up a cigarette, I knew this isn't good. This is not good for me in any way, shape or form. It's not good for my future. You know, it's not doing anything for me, but it was the addiction to the way it made me feel, having something to do with my hands, having something to speak about with people from a very young age that bedded it in as a habit, which then became my identity and then became part of my behavioral patterns. And that stayed for 10 years. So it was a hard habit to break, but truly it was the habit replacement, along with cutting down very slowly, that helped me. And I have to say that I actually don't remember the day that I quit. I can't tell you the date. I don't know how long it's been since I had a cigarette, because it was so gradual and so slow. And there were so many steps back and relapses. And I'd go out and buy a packet of cigarettes when I was really stressed. And, you know, so it's almost like, again, I know I say this a lot about my journey and my own story, but there wasn't this like sign from God and today's the day I'm going to do it. You know, it was just the gradual gathering of this lifestyle, realizing this is what I wanted for myself, and honestly becoming addicted to self-improvement. And anyone I speak to who's been through similar things will tell you the same. It's really addictive, because once you click into, okay, I know running does this for me, and I know that if I add good nutrition and weightlifting on top of that, I could be whoever I want. I can transform myself in, you know, a year, 2 years. Imagine where I'll be in three if I keep reading and writing and going to therapy or engaging in like good habits for myself. That becomes really addictive. And that addiction for me overtook the need to smoke cigarettes, because I knew that with cigarettes, I'd never achieve any of the things I wanted to. I certainly would not have run a marathon. I would not have this job. I wouldn't be sat here on this podcast, like all for that, a cigarette, really? I was going to give up all of that future for that. No way. Often it's about getting real with yourself as well. I think a lot of people, because it is unconscious, we are able to put it to a part of our mind where we're not actually fully engaging with it. So we're not honest about what it's actually doing to us, which is difficult. But sometimes it's uncomfortable to look in the mirror and say, I know this isn't good for me, but for some reason I'm still doing it. And looking at why, what is it that I'm lacking in my life that doesn't fulfill me, that I feel the need to have this habit? Is it my relationships with other people? Am I not feeling fulfilled from the food that I'm eating? I know that that's a really big one too. I think a lot of people I see who are very restrictive with their diets often have other habits like caffeine, nicotine, because you're not being fully nourished and you're not finding joy in food. And I have to say as well, when my diet changed, that helped a lot with quitting smoking, because naturally when you're more nourished and you're getting the macro and micronutrients that your body and brain needs to feel good and feel alive and make good decisions, you end up kind of not wanting the things that are bad for you. And I've said this a lot about alcohol as well. It is almost like when you click into the things that are good for you and you manage to make them a little bit of a habit, sure, there will be steps back, but things that are detrimental to that can become quite frustrating. And I got to a point where I was just tired of it. And I just thought, well, I just can't do this anymore. You know, I can't keep trying to manage both and manage people's expectations of me to do both as well. Like, people pleasing is such a huge thing when it comes to these sorts of habits, because, you know, you want to be the cool one that's like in the smoking area, chatting to everyone. But I think the coolest thing you can ever do is say no to things that aren't serving you. That's the coolest thing you can ever do. I remember the first time I went out for dinner with my mates, and they were staying out a wee bit later. And I had planned my first 15K. I'll never forget the first 15K I ever ran down the Thames path. And they were staying out for a nightcap and having a smoke. And I just said, I've got to go home because I'm doing this big run tomorrow. And the feeling that I had, the butterflies in my stomach for those kinds of runs, are the butterflies I used to get getting ready for a night out. I think there's a lot of similarities between the process of getting ready for a run and getting ready for a night out for me, because I used to love getting ready, putting on music, having a drink, and then going out and like having my adventures in the bars. Never ended well, never did anything for my future. But getting ready for a run, putting on hype music, taking my little pre-workout, choosing my outfit, like that feels just as fun. And it's also working towards my future and doing something really cool for myself. And I get to see trees and nature instead of the inside of a dark, dingy bar. So, you know, not that there's anything wrong with bars, but anyway, I've said my spiel on alcohol too many times on this podcast. If you want to drink, it's fine. If we break down habit replacement to three fundamental things, we're looking at the physical, the mental, and the social, which is what we've kind of spoken about. So cigarettes contain nicotine that, when inhaled, cause a release of the chemical dopamine, which we've spoken about. But what's important to note is after the dopamine release depletes, these symptoms return, which causes the smoker to crave another cigarette. So imagine your dopamine system is like a cup of water, right? When you smoke a cigarette, you're getting all those happy chemicals. The dopamine is being poured out of the cup into you, right? Then that depletes from you. That goes. But this cup never fills up again. So your baseline of dopamine happiness is down there now. So the next time you have a cigarette or take a drink, pouring more of the happy chemicals into yourself, they deplete from you, but this stays lower. So it's damaging your happiness signals and your fulfillment signals, which is very interesting to note. And something I realized is that, you know, the more I partied, the more extreme it got, the more I smoked, I needed more, constantly needed more to feel something, right? More tequila, more late nights, more ridiculous outfits, like more loud music, like needed, constantly needed more, 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 because my baseline happiness just got lower and lower and lower and lower and lower. Whereas now, if you're looking at a lifestyle that I know so many of you follow and are trying to follow, what you have to realize is you're not going to get that huge rush. You're not going to get that massive influx of chemicals to your body that make you feel good and excited. But what you should be aiming for in life, for a healthy life, is just a nice balance, a very gentle wave like that. And sometimes you run a marathon. Oh my God, that's really cool. And then you might go a little bit down after the marathon, but you come back up because you've got other things going on in your life that ground you. That's what you should be looking for. Not, whoa, crash. So just keep that in mind. The next time you notice yourself needing more to feel good, more of everything, more excess, just know that that's what's happening in your brain. And a lot of people do things called dopamine cleanses, which I'm yet to do like any proper research into, but I know that it is something that can work for a lot of people that struggle with their attention span and habit forming. You know, they do cold turkey on social media, music, cigarettes, alcohol, everything. I'm sure, you know, that doesn't sound very balanced, but I'm sure for some people who need a hard reset, it can help. So it is something that's a really lovely discussion happening now. People have access to this information about why we do what we do and why our brain makes us feel that way. So I think letting go of the extreme emotions, and especially as someone living with a mood disorder, has been very scary, because when you've lived in chaos for so long, you almost become addicted to stress and negative emotions. Like, I had really difficult romantic relationships, friendships, and relationships with myself and with substances, right? So constant chaos and constant pain and stress. And you become, that's your normal, that's your safety, you're safe in that. So when you start breaking out and you start to feel calm, I'm like bracing myself for like, right, when's the chaos happening? Should I create stress so that I feel like something's happening? Like, why do I feel so happy and calm? It's difficult. It's difficult to go from that to this, but you can get there. I think it's just sitting in that uncomfortable feeling in the calm mundaneness of life, which to me is my happy place now. And being like, right, this is okay. I'm safe here. I'm safe and I'm fine. And I don't need to sabotage this. Which, and this could be another episode, it was Joe and I's anniversary yesterday, and I was just reflecting on just how different this relationship is compared to my previous ones. And one of the things that I experienced in the beginning of our relationship was I felt so scared because it was so calm and we don't argue and there's no discarding and mean text messages. And it's all, you know, that big rush of chemicals of fight, then passion, then, you know, we just have a really calm, gentle, respectful relationship. And that's terrifying for people who have been through cycles of nasty things with people and with partying or whatever it is, mental health, you know, calmness can feel scary, but that is where you should exist. And I'm giving you permission to exist there. We've been through the mental and social already of quitting smoking, but to break it down into kind of like bullet points of what we've covered, the methods to quit, you know, cigarettes or anything, is track your behavior patterns. So be aware of your cues when that happens. Avoid your triggers. So, you know, not allowing yourself to go to the smoking area, trying to reduce your stress levels, replace the behavior. So for me, instead of actually funny, I used to walk to the corner shop to get my cigarettes and crisps or whatever. Instead of walking to the corner shop, I would put my running shoes on and I would jog around the park. So that's me replacing a behavior. Distract yourself during urges or cravings. So this could be anything from reading a book to calling a friend to telling a mate. You know, you can have someone who's a buddy who's like on it with you and knows that those are your cues and something you're really trying to do. Reward yourself for your progress. Big thing. I, for example, I didn't have any running gear to start with, but throughout my journey, I would reward myself for not smoking and for doing like a week with just like having a few drinks instead of loads with, you know, I'd get a pair of running shoes, for example, or a notepad or a calendar or a new pen, little things that were helping me along my journey. Like I bought the first time I deadlifted, like, I think it was like 40 kilos, which was a big deal for me. I got myself some chalk for my hands, like little things like that. Just remember to take a moment and really take stock and reward yourself for what you've done, because it's really hard what you're doing. And a lot of people don't realize, like, you know, there's a huge mountain to climb for people who have been through this to be able to arrive and do the fitness thing. And, you know, give yourself credit, because they're also silent battles that you're facing as well. Like, if no one knew me or my story and they just knew me as Cassia, who runs marathons and is a coach, they may assume that that's always been what I've been like. And I've always had this body and these lungs, and I'm always, you know, I've always been like this. But there's a huge, underneath the surface, a huge iceberg of things that I've been through to get here. And for you as well, you know, there's loads of things that I'll never know about. No one will ever know about the silent battles that you face every day, the conversations that you have with yourself late at night or early in the morning when you're fighting those urges to self-destruct. You know, those are the real quiet, difficult moments. And you know, you should be so proud of yourself for overcoming them, because the hardest battles are the ones that we face in silence and we face alone. So yeah, reward yourself for your progress. Forgive yourself for your slip-ups. This is huge. I mean, relapses, steps backwards, they are normal. Mistakes are not an ending. They are a chance to try again. I couldn't even say how many times I fucked up on my journey. So many. And I still do, like, I still do all the time, with like my self-talk and my boundaries. And, you know, I'm still on this journey, but with cigarettes, so many times when I was just like too stressed, having a meltdown, and I just reach for it, and it, you know, and then I'd get like a few puffs in and I wouldn't want it anymore, because I'm like, oh no, that's not what I didn't mean to do that. But you know, instead of saying like, right, well, I've had a puff now, that's it, I'm a smoker again, I would just gently put the cigarettes in the bin and then try to start again tomorrow. But these things are really difficult to break, especially if you're someone who lives with mood disorders or any kind of mental struggle where these sorts of substances help you escape those feelings. It's so hard to replace these habits, but it is possible. And I hope that the information in this podcast has kind of given you a little bit of an idea of like how to do it, how I did it, what's happening in your brain and body when you are reaching for these things. And I just hope that even if it's not that you take away from today that you're going to start now, I hope you take away the idea of what is happening in your subconscious and unconscious mind and being aware of your behavior patterns. Because even if you don't feel ready to change, please at least be aware of what you'd like to change. That's my task for you today. Look at how you speak to yourself, the little things that happen in your day-to-day life. Try and pick out, right, when am I being nasty to myself? When am I telling myself I can't do things? When do I reach for the sweets or the cigarettes? Or, you know, it doesn't mean you have to stop, but at least being aware of it is going to create that conversation in your mind and maybe open space for change. Because being aware and asking for help are probably the first two steps. And being brave, of course. So I hope that information helps you. And you know, I have so many stories of going backwards and taking steps backwards. And I think my biggest was probably when the pubs reopened in 2020, and I think by this point I'd lost like 50 pounds or 60 pounds or something, you know, massive change. It had clicked. It had started. I had done it. I'd quit smoking. I'd become alcohol free at that point, and everything was working. I had a good running routine. I felt like my relationships were better. My mental health was starting to get better. The pubs reopened. This was like October, so this was Halloween 2020, and I went out one night for Halloween. And in the back of my mind, knew I shouldn't, because Halloween is very, I'd always had massive parties at Halloween. It was always like a thing. So I went out and I was like, well, I can do this sober. I don't need to smoke. I don't need to drink. I can dress up like a clown and go out and be normal. And unfortunately that night I relapsed really badly, and I had a really nasty night out, and I ended up actually injuring myself by falling over. And that was kind of like a big wake up call of like, right, you've taken quite a big step back here. So the next morning, that was it for me. I remember sitting down and getting a notepad out and writing down all the reasons why I felt the need to take that step backwards and what had happened to get me to that point and what I could do to kind of like stop that happening again. So I hope you know that like I made massive mistakes and I'm still here, you know, sat before you and I made it, but just please forgive yourself when you do, because they're going to happen. It's just about overcoming it every time and it gets easier every single time, I promise. We are going to end today on a poem. It's a lovely, lovely poem. It's one of my favorites and it's something that I think my mum sent to me originally, and now I do read this before any big life moments, but it's by Erin Hansen. There is freedom waiting for you on the breezes of the sky, and you ask, what if I fall? Oh, but my darling, what if you fly? There you go. So don't always be thinking about what happens if I fail. Try to switch that narrative and think, but what if I succeed? What if my wildest dreams come true? Give yourself permission to dream big things, and I wish you all the best of luck with this. I hope this helps. I can do more episodes on breaking bad habits as well, maybe with some specialists in the next season. But thank you for listening, friends. I will talk to you next week. Loads of love.